What does it take to run 3 profitable businesses? Today's guest knows. He's running 3 right now. Welcome, everyone, to the 4th episode of the Thrive to Serve podcast. This is Victor Nagorny, and my guest today is David Dodge, founder of Shore Prep Learning, a successful tutoring business, Tutorware, a software as a service company which allows tutoring companies to manage their business, and now CodaKit, where kids learn how to code and design games and local classes, camps, and online courses. In today's episode, David shares a lot of wisdom that comes directly from his success and failures building 3 businesses, including his morning routine with an accountability partner to keep him on track, how he was able to grow his first business from his apartment into the Inc. 5000 company 3 years in a row, and why it's crucial for every service business to keep their brand promise. Get comfortable, you're about to learn how to thrive.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time. Time to break through your limitations that are holding you back from growing your business. Join me on a journey to help you create sustainable, profitable growth through real stories and proven experience from successful service business owners. This is Thrive to Serve Podcast, because you owe your clients to run a thriving business. Together, we shall thrive.
A quick message from our sponsor. Why would you let a developer without any marketing knowledge mess with your business website? If you want results, if you want leads, don't let blind lead the blind. Turn your website into a lead-generating machine. Let marketing experts at Project Army manage your WordPress website. For more details, visit projectarmy.net/WP. That's one sure way to run a thriving service business, making sure your website actually works. Welcome, David, to the show. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day to sit down and have a conversation about your business with me today. So to start things off, you're a special case because you have 3 businesses right now. So it's hard to just focus on one. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to tell us a little bit about your businesses and what you're doing right now, so everybody knows where you're coming from.
I own 2 educational services companies. One is called Shore Prep Learning. It is an academic tutoring company. I own a second educational services company called CodaKid, which is a children's computer programming and game design academy. And the third business I own is a SaaS, software as a service company called Tutorware, which is a business services software for educational services companies.
Okay, that's great. To start things off in the beginning, before you got in the business for yourself, what were you doing?
I started out life in Silicon Valley. I worked in software development in the video game industry. So I started working at Sega of America back in the early 90s, worked on a number of games for the Sega Genesis, the Sega 32X, and ended up getting hired away by a startup that was building games for the PC and the Sony PlayStation, and I began designing games. So that's my background and an important part of why I ended up starting CodaKid. After that, I have kind of a fairly different background, but after doing that for almost a decade, basically I changed gears completely and got into education. I taught for several years. I taught English as a second language. I taught in several countries. I ended up teaching in Argentina. I taught in Quebec, actually in Montreal. Taught in the United States, and I taught in Mexico. After I did that, I ended up going back to school and getting an MBA at Thunderbird here in the Phoenix Valley area where I'm originally from. And from there, I decided to launch Shore Prep Learning, my first company.
That sounds pretty good, especially I didn't realize that you were in game development in the early days, and now that makes sense why you started CodaKid now.
Yeah, it was a really special time. The big console of my day was the Sega Genesis, and I was there when it was overtaken by Sony PlayStation 1, and it was really, really cool to be able to work on games for that platform.
No, absolutely. I remember. I still have it somewhere in the closet, PlayStation 1, the big box.
Gathering dust, yes.
I love that thing. I'm curious, you mentioned that you taught in a lot of different countries. Which one was your favorite to teach in?
Oh, wow. I would have to say Argentina. I just had a blast down there. It's a fantastic... I love Canada. I loved Quebec. I loved teaching up there as well. And I had a lot of fun in Mexico too. But Argentina, there's something just really special about it. I worked primarily, I taught business English. I taught executives for large multinational companies that needed to improve their English business skills. I taught negotiation, you know, how to give presentations, all kinds of business tasks in English. The people were fantastic. Seriously, at 2 a.m. there, you would see people in their 70s and 80s coming out of tango bars, you know, after a great night out. I mean, there's just a great culture there, a lot of really fun and interesting people, and just had a ton of fun.
No, it sounds like a lot of fun. Teaching is always important, I think. My mom was a teacher, so I grew up around teachers, so I know how important that role is. And it's definitely undervalued, especially in the U.S.
Yeah, absolutely.
Codekit is your primary business right now, and I know there's a lot of things going on. Can you tell us a little bit about, like, what's Codekit about? Like, what exactly do you do? I know you have camps and classes to teach kids programming, but how do you go about that, teaching to, like, a 7-year-old how to program?
Computer programming has traditionally been taught to students, you know, if they're lucky in high school, and then, you know, obviously in college, it's a big focus. We basically realized that one of the main reasons that younger kids haven't really gravitated to computer programming is that it just hasn't, the way it's been taught, the sort of the hello world method where you type hello world on the screen, isn't very fun and isn't very engaging. So we worked hard as a team. I have a fantastic curriculum team here, and we came up with a really interesting way to teach coding to younger kids. We have several tracks that we do, but we have a track that's a Java programming track called Modding for Minecraft with Java. And basically we lift the hood on the source code of Minecraft, which is written in Java. And we teach kids foundational coding concepts like conditionals and loops and variables and methods and parameters, all kinds of things. And the kids get to create their own custom mods in Minecraft, and then get that instant gratification of seeing their work in the game. So it's a really cool way of showing kids the power of programming and establishing that connection between coding and creativity. We also have an app development class, which actually uses JavaScript. And again, we involve gaming. Kids build mobile game apps from the ground up. And we have just gotten great feedback. The kids get really super excited. They are fully capable of learning coding concepts. Like, if this condition is true, the computer will do this. Sometimes we're hampered a bit by QWERTY keyboarding skills, but we have a way of teaching that as well. So far it's just been, it's gone really, really well, and we're having a ton of fun.
No, that sounds great. I can definitely relate. When I was in high school, my freshman year, I took what was it called? The Quick Basic.
Yep.
Learning the basics of programming, which was very simple. And then my second year, my sophomore year in high school, I took Java. So I spent a whole year learning to program Java. You know, nothing extraordinary, but just the basics, simple apps and things like that. I know how tedious that can be.
Very cool.
What your typical day looks like? You know, you have three businesses you're trying to juggle and running profitably. So what your typical day looks like? Can you walk us through?
I wake up pretty early in the morning. Some of that stems from having a 2-year-old at home. But I wake up very early. I have a ritual that I have found very helpful. I have an accountability partner, and we text each other every day the most important tasks that are on our plate that would provide the most value for our company. And I, you know, very early in the morning text my friend Lior, and he texts me of the things that he intends to get done that day. And then at the end of the day, we check in with each other on what we were able to get done, what we weren't. So that's how I start my day, doing that and drinking lots of coffee. I live in beautiful, sunny Arizona, so I am blessed with, I can walk or ride my bike to work. So I head into the office, here, in Old Town Scottsdale. And, I basically answer a few emails, and then I get started with my tasks. I'm always referring back to the text that I wrote Lior, so kind of keeps me in line.
Okay, that's great. No, accountability partner is definitely something that a lot of people should do. I try to do it with my wife just to keep me on point.
Yeah,
that's helpful when somebody can push you along, especially when you're self-employed. There's so many responsibilities that a lot of things can get away from you quickly.
Yeah, another thing that we as a company are beginning to institute. I'm not sure if you've heard of Vern Harnish from Gazelles, but he has a book called Scaling Up. He was the author of The Rockefeller Habits, and he has something that is called the Daily Huddle, and it's kind of a ritual that we as a team are getting into, where we basically check in and in a very short period of time discuss what we're doing, that day. And it kind of, everybody as a team kind of gets a sense of kind of where everyone else is and what we're working on. So that's another part of my, very important part of my morning.
I have the book and I'm reading it right now. So it's not so much like reading it, it's like more like a textbook where you can reference different sections to try to implement, because there's so much good stuff in it. You know, the one page plan and all that stuff, the Rockefeller Habits, that it's, there's so much stuff that it's just like you can't bite off too much, because you're just going to not be able to overwhelm yourself. So it's definitely a great book. It's not for everybody.
Yeah. Well, I'm in an organization called Entrepreneurs Organization. It's EO for short. For entrepreneurs out there, I highly suggest getting involved with some sort of a support group, whether it be EO Accelerator or Entrepreneurs Organization. If you have more than $1 million in annual revenue, you would qualify. Vern came and spoke actually at one of our events a few weeks ago, and it's just fantastic.
I think he's in charge of that organization. Isn't he like a chairman or a president?
He started it several decades ago. And I bet he's a permanent member on the global board somewhere. I don't know exactly what his role is now, though.
I just remember it from the book. And I think it's a good thing. You know, I don't have a huge business for myself, but I'm reading it because it helps me figure out exactly where my business needs to go and how it needs to be structured to be able to grow easily. It helps you create that path that you need to follow on your journey to growth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Juggling three businesses, what usually keeps you up at night? What are the things that are on your mind for your businesses?
I guess what keeps me up at night is delivering on the brand promise. I, in educational services companies, actually in most services companies, operations is, making sure that you fulfill on your promises. I think, the keys. Whenever you grow and scale, the risk of losing quality is always something that can become it's a very common issue. And yes, that thought keeps me up at night. Somehow, as we grow, we're delivering some sort of subpar service experience.
Now, that's a thought that I'm very familiar with. You know, running a service business, trying to trust others to do things that in the beginning you were doing, and making sure that the quality is the same, it's definitely a challenge. But that's when it becomes important to make sure that you're hiring the right people.
Yes, absolutely.
What are you working on right now? I know you have the three businesses, so what are the things on your plate right now that you are growing?
I mean, SurePrep, my first company, is kind of in autopilot mode, which is nice. Tutorware is, we're relaunching this summer. I am spending quite a bit of time with our design team, just going over wireframes and making sure that some of the new architecture that we're producing is on track and is going to be what our customers want. But CodaKit is definitely taking the most of my time right now. CodaKid has a brick and mortar business, so we have an academy here in Arizona. We do after school classes and camps. We are expanding that, getting ready for a busy summer camp season. We're on a pretty fast growth trajectory right now. We're anticipating almost 400% growth this year. And, what I'm primarily working on, is the launch of our online division, which, you're actually helping with. And, the online division is, really exciting for us. It's a way for us to take all of the hard work that, you know, we've put in over the last year, honing our lesson plans, our curricula, which we just think is fantastic, and allowing students from all over the world to take self-paced computer programming classes online. So we're very, very excited about that. I'm spending a ton of time just making sure that that goes well. And again, what keeps me up at night there is fulfilling the brand promise and making sure that customers will get the kind of support that they need should they run into bugs or installation issues, things like that.
What I'm curious about, you mentioned a Tutorware, and I haven't asked, but I just remembered the question I had. I was curious because yours started out as a service business, and you still are service business, but Tutorware is one of your businesses that's a service as a software. How did you get an idea to create Tutorware and launch it as a business?
Well, SurePrep grew really fast. We were an Inc. 500, 5,000 company for 3 years in a row with just an insane growth trajectory. And we needed software to run our business. We were in 19 markets and had around 1,500 active employees, tutors, and we could not find software that handled our needs. We were using six different software suites to run our business, and it just was insane. All the version control issues that we had and whatnot. So we just started to build modules to help us with pain points, and before long, we realized that we had a software that in many ways we felt was more valuable than our tutoring company. It's very unique. It's been designed by tutoring professionals from the ground up and used. It's great, actually, when you're able to use a software and build it with your own employees. Rather than, early adopters and whatnot. We basically built it for ourselves, realized that it was something really special that other companies would want. And, we will be unveiling the latest Rev. It's a long story, but we basically realized who our customers really are. And we realized we needed to make a pretty significant architectural change to one of the modules. And we're doing that right now. And we're really excited for this summer. We think we're going to have a product that's going to really help tutoring companies all over the world manage their businesses.
That sounds like a good thing to do, because you're doing it the right way. You know, a lot of startups start with an idea, sometimes not even having any experience in the industry, and then they try to figure out why they fail because they don't really know the customers. And you are the customer, and you built it for yourself, and you built for tutoring companies that are doing similar things, and you know their pain really well.
Yes, I do.
That's the best way, to try to treat yourself first, and then once you have that perfect solution, you can go about selling it to others.
Knock on wood, goes well this summer, and we're really excited.
Well, you got two successful companies. I'm pretty sure the third one will be a success too.
I hope so.
So we got to our Thrive round, as I like to call it. So I want to tap into your experience over the last 10 years running your businesses to see how you're doing things in your business operationally, marketing, sales, and things like that. So my first question is, what do you think is the number one thing that professional service provider needs to know running a service business?
Well, again, I'll go back to brand promise. I think that one thing that really trips service companies up is when your marketing promises something and you're not able to deliver. For example, at CodaKid, our brand promise is that your students will learn how to code in a fun and engaging environment, in an educational environment that is conducive to learning, that is open and encourages kids to ask questions and interact with their peers. And, if we as a company go out and have a teacher that goofs off, for example, and, maybe they, I don't know, this hasn't happened yet, but, you know, let's say that a teacher goes out and instead of coding, the kids convince the teacher that it's okay to play Minecraft all afternoon and not program Minecraft and, you know, not program in Java. And parents find out about that and that they're paying a lot of money for their kid to be sitting around playing Minecraft. I mean, that would be, cause for a pretty bad, Yelp review or whatever else. And those types of things, will affect your business down the line.
That's so true with a service business. That's why in Silicon Valley, the tech startups these days, that's why venture capitalists don't want to get into service business, because there's so much reliance on the person, on the people, that it's not an app that you can just code and it does its thing as expected for the most part. But like when there's so much human element in the service, that it's hard to control. But I find that's one of the things why I have a service business, why I prefer working with service businesses, because I do like that part about it, the human element.
Yes, definitely. Well, one thing that we work very hard on here is creating key performance indicators, KPIs, as we call them, and when you're able to boil your business processes down to some really key metrics, it allows you, as you grow and scale, to kind of gauge very quickly on a daily basis or weekly basis or monthly basis, however your KPIs are set up, the health and trajectory of your business.
Absolutely. You need to know what you need to measure to be able to figure out if it's working or not. I see that a lot in marketing. A lot of people come to me asking me why it's not working, and there's no way to measure it. So in the early days, did you make any mistakes then when you look back on that time and you think, what was I thinking about?
Oh, man. Yes. So many mistakes. I don't even know where to begin. When I launched SurePrep Learning in 2005, I basically launched it in my little apartment. I had no money. I had no marketing budget. I had really nothing. And I put a little website up and started to market to some schools and other aggregators. And in the early days, as I grew, I grew too quickly. I did not plan for, again, the operational side of that growth. My approach back then was, let's just throw something at the wall, and if it sticks, let's just run with it, and hey, we'll figure it out. And what ends up happening is you end up having to make diving catches, and it feels great the first, you know, couple of diving catches you make to avoid some fiasco, but after a while, diving catches get exhausting. And it's not obviously not scalable. Other mistakes. Mistake number one was not really creating an operations plan and thinking through a scalable model that would deliver a brand promise. So that's mistake number one. Mistake number two was my hiring. I didn't really establish a hiring process. I didn't really establish a culture, and I just sort of hired based on, intuition. And a lot of my early hires were poor ones. And I learned the hard way that a bad hire will cost your company almost 10x the bad employee's annual salary. Had a number of issues with that. Learned the hard way.
I think it's so true. And you mentioned scaling up earlier. And I can't remember the specific quote from the book, but paraphrasing it, it says that growth needs cash.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't grow if you have no cash.
Yeah, that was another big pain point for us. We were growing very quickly, and our customers, with SurePrep in its second year, became school districts who were paying us net 60 and net 90. And we had to pay our employees every 2 weeks. And so we had just a tremendous cash crunch. So that was very, very challenging. We had to factor receivables, which was very expensive. It took us almost a year and a half to get a line of credit with a bank. And that was a, I remember that when we finally got our first line, and it was, I think it was the first night I'd slept well in, in almost a year.
Right. I know that pain very well. It's a very serious pain that a lot of people don't realize, that just because the industry does 30, 60, 90 day accounts receivable, it doesn't mean that it's like your business has to do it, And I think that's, again, referring back to scaling up. There are some really good ideas of how to try to mitigate that to have more cash flowing into your business. Because one thing I realized, I don't know if you I'll see that analogy, like when you try to grow your business and you need more cash, it's like trying to scale Mount Everest without oxygen.
Yes. Yes.
It's like the higher you go, the less oxygen it gets. If you don't bring any with you, you'll die eventually.
Yes. No doubt. I have bootstrapped all of my businesses. So I have never taken a single investment dollar from the outside, which many of my friends think has just been insane. And I've there have been some, periods of suffering, no doubt, in doing so. But yes, you learn very quickly that cash is king. Managing cash flow is mission critical, and mistakes regarding cash flow can absolutely sink your business in a very short period of time.
There was an article in, I believe it was Inc. magazine, a friend of mine showed me, and it was about being an entrepreneur, and they had this interesting a story somebody described of like how what's an entrepreneur, and what the description was that it's like a lot of people see an entrepreneur as this this man on sitting on top of a lion, and they like they're amazed at that person. It's like, oh, he was able to get on top of a lion, he was able to tame the lion. when you get in the head of entrepreneur, the entrepreneur thinks, how did I get on this line? How do I stay on top of it? It's not easy.
No, you're right. You're right. It's not.
But I would never trade it for anything.
Oh, yeah. No, no doubt. No, when things are going well in entrepreneurship, you're at the top of the world. I mean, there's nothing better. When things are going poorly, there's nothing worse. So it's a lot of ups and downs.
The funny thing is the best roller coasters have the steepest falls, you know, and twists and turns. So it gets more rewarding as the more work you put in.
Yeah, no, I would agree.
So you mentioned hiring, and that's a good topic to briefly touch on. Like, how did you transition from hiring not so good people to hiring great people? Like, do you have any tips for other people that are looking to start hiring or trying to figure out how to hire better? Because I do a lot of consultations with small business owners, and one of the things I hear sometimes is like, it's so hard for me to hire somebody who will do the same quality of work that I would do, you know, and that's where I always suffer is it's like the people are not doing what I want them to do.
Yeah. Well, I'd be lying to you if I, would, you know, told you I'm a hiring guru. I still make lots of mistakes. But one thing that I have learned, over the past few years is the importance of culture. And, you know, when you put culture first, great things happen. With SurePrep in the early days, we let the culture create itself, and the culture that was created at one point was not at all what we envisioned. It was like a runaway train. We had people that the old expression from E-Myth that I, you know, you've got sometimes you know, employees that are in the wrong seat of the bus rather than, you know, but some of our employees were actually just didn't belong on the bus at all. So what we've really done with our latest ventures and really we've used this to, you know, to transform all of our companies is really paying attention to culture. You know, once I read Tony Hsieh's Delivering Happiness, it's just a great book that really, really has helped me transform our companies. We now, the mission and vision statement that we have for our companies is not just some thing that just hangs out on the wall. It's something that is, you know, it's the core of who we are and what we do and our culture. We actually sent out a culture questionnaire to all of our employees and to all of our customers. And it was so interesting to get their feedback on what our culture is really about here is at CodaKid. We have used their feedback to frame, you know, what our values here at CodaKid are. And we use them in hiring, in firing, in pretty much every decision that we make. So there can be great people that have a great track record that could probably sell the heck out of our product. But if they are egotistical don't work well in a team context, they just aren't a fit for the culture, and we will just simply not hire based on things like that.
Right. No, absolutely. I'm curious, you mentioned that you sent the questionnaire out to customers. Like, how did customers receive that? Were they eager to reply and provide good feedback?
Yeah, definitely. I was pleasantly surprised. We have a very loyal customer base. You know, we just celebrated a year in business at CodaKid. So a lot of our customers have been with us the entire way through. There are very few academies like us in the United States. And I think the customers feel like they're part of something really special. And, you know, we in many ways with our curricula and how we do things feel like we are creating fresh tracks in the snow, or actually, I guess we're in the desert here, fresh footprints in the desert. The customers, when they got the questionnaires, I was surprised. I've gotten the majority of them the majority of the customers I approached have already sent theirs back. And they gave me just some really cool feedback on what they perceive our culture is about, things that I hadn't considered.
Like, you have to ask. Like, a lot of people think, oh, the customers won't talk to me. It's like, well, did you ask?
Well, one thing that Tony Say from Zappos has done is he's created a culture book, and we are going to be doing the same. We're actually taking all of the feedback that we've gotten from our customers and our employees, and we're going to print a book every year and have it as part of our hiring, like our hiring and training process. So it'll be like a little part of our process for new hires. And as well, we're going to have copies of it out here for our customers that come and visit. It's really cool to involve them in our company in such an intimate way.
No, that sounds great. No, it's good to hear that you're doing that, because not many businesses do, and they don't realize how much they're losing out on. My next question is, like, what's the best thing you did to get more customers like that?
I think the best thing we've done to get more customers is really focus on customer service. We go above and beyond, your traditional educational services company in terms of, we're constantly doing surveys, of customers, of our kids. We're doing a lot of outreach to them. What I find is that, the vast majority of our new customers come from referrals, from satisfied customers. They're telling their friends, and we feel that our customer service, like, by really staying uber focused on that, it in many ways, it costs money to do. You have to pay employees to, you know, to create surveys, to make the calls and do all of that. But we almost see it as part of our marketing budget.
You mentioned referrals. Have you done anything proactive, any campaigns or anything like that to get more referrals from customers?
Yes, we have. I've been researching some referral software. There was one called Referizer, I believe, that I was looking at. So we have not formally used a software that's kind of geared towards that. But what we have done we created a referral bonus program. So basically, customers will earn dollars off on their next class if they refer someone and whatnot. So we have a very active email base. We do regular email campaigns, and we have a pretty large number of people on our list now. We talk a lot about our referral program in those e-blasts.
At least you have the program in place, even though you don't have the software. And not many businesses are able to have a software to be able to track that. But it's good that you have a program set up that clients know about.
We're looking to develop that further this year. That's actually on my list of things to do this week. So I'll be texting Lior about that on Monday.
So when you do start working with customers, be it a Coda Kid, once they sign us, come in for the class or the camp, or if you think back to the Sure Prep days when you were actively involved in it, when you start working with the customers, like, do you have any tips on setting the expectations for the journey that you're about to embark on with them?
Well, first of all, in our business, our customers really aren't we don't view them as the people paying the tab. We view our customers as the end user, the student. And We stay extremely student-focused in all of our educational services businesses, and we find that when you do that, the customers are, as the parents are extremely happy. You know, on the website, we try to establish some brand promises. Many of our clients we speak with on the phone prior to having them send their students to us, and you know, we'll talk very clearly about what you know, where we're going, and you know, what the brand promise is. We also have a very clear pathway on our website that kind of lists the courses that we offer: the beginner one, beginner two, intermediate one, intermediate two, and we'll be getting into advanced courses soon. So there's a clear pathway that's established there. I guess I don't have any really like, you know, secret hints there other than I think it's important to frame your brand promises, like what the experience will be like, and to try, you know, again, to deliver something that is replicable and predictable to your customers.
Sticking to your brand promises is always the key. My next question is about competitors. How do you try to differentiate yourself from other companies that are selling similar classes, camps for kids?
Well, we don't have a ton of competitors yet at CodaKid, but we the ones that we do compete against, we really try to compete in terms of customer service. And I also think that one of our real differentiators is how we are supreme, like above all, an academic institute. But the kids almost don't realize it because they're having so much fun. They see it almost like enrichment or some sort of entertainment. So I'd say that. Customer service, I think is one way that we certainly differentiate. And then, the other way is just our curricula is, we think it's very, very unique. We think it's groundbreaking and, we haven't seen anything quite like it.
Absolutely. Customer service and the service industry is, can be very big differentiator from competitors.
Yeah. And on the tutorware side, just, you know, transitioning over there, I think that the one really, you know, kind of interesting competitive advantage we have there is most people that are selling software to educational services companies, whether they're, you know, SAT prep companies or after school tutoring companies or, you know, enrichment camps or whatever, most of them are software guys that don't know the business. And when I'm able to sit down with a tutoring test prep educational services company, and I have the background and experience of growing, you know, two successful companies from the ground up, and we speak the same language. Chances are I've been through some of the things that they're going through, and I can relate to their pain points. So we definitely get a lot of traction from company owners that are like, wow, you're the first person I've talked to that knows that pain point and actually has created a solution for it. You know, amazing. So it's been a lot of fun interacting with, you know, with educational service owners around the globe.
Right. It's key to know the pain points of your customers. And it's so much easier when you are the first customer. That's one of the things I tell all of our clients, like when it comes to, especially when it comes to marketing and sales, it's like you should treat your business as a client. You know, your business is your first client, your first customer. If you can't treat your client or your first customer the way you treat others, like you can't really do, you can't run a profitable business. One of my last questions is, where do you see your service industry heading in the future? I know there's a lot of stuff everything is going in the cloud, you know, online classes, online courses and things like that. Open, you know, those, what are they called? The MOOCs, the multi.
Sure.
I can't remember what it stands for. The large online classes. Like, where do you see it's heading?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I think, you know, I really enjoyed, J.J. Abrams, his first Star Trek movie. There's a came out a few years ago. I can't remember the name. It's not there's a scene in which a young Spock is in this learning pod with this. He's surrounded by, you know, computer screens, and basically he's being taught essentially by AI. And you know, I think AI, I think that intelligent versions of Siri are going to play a role, obviously, in the future of education. The one lament that I have about our brick and mortar business on the CodaKid side is that it's very expensive. It's also very expensive to run. It's not affordable for low income families. Now, we are starting a nonprofit that will donate our products and services to schools and districts in Title I areas, which is going to be a big part of what we do in 2016. To truly make education scalable, it's going to have to involve AI. I love what companies out there like Newton, KNEWTON, are doing. They're creating essentially, very intelligent, AI for education. Pearson Learning is now working with them, and, they're using basically big data in order to create completely customized, personalized learning pathways for students, as they take self-paced courses online. The MOOC phenomenon, I think, will continue to grow as well. There's nothing better than free. I think that we're going to see the expansion of Khan Academy and similar models, where students from all over the world will be able to learn how to code and learn how to, study calculus or whatever the topic may be. What we do to kind of, I guess, to stay ahead of the curve, it's all about curricula. It's all about training. I think, as an educator, at least for the time being, I cannot see, still any better way to learn than with a real human being that is highly trained, that is highly intuitive, that is able to build rapport in a very human way with students. So we'll continue. I think parents love our brick and mortar classes, and we'll continue to build those classes and camps around the country. Our asynchronous platform, our self-paced platform, the online offering that we're coming out with, that will be the one that we'll just have to stay ahead of everybody with stellar content, and hopefully we'll be able to differentiate. Right now, our online product is, we think, significantly better than anything you will find out there. It's called Modding for Minecraft with Java, and it's A, a lot of fun, and B, it's really, really educational.
I think it was recently, it was this year, maybe within the last month, I was reading in the news that MIT and a bunch of other universities were offering for the past few years free courses, like their curricula and all the material online that you can go through and learn the same type of stuff that they teach in classrooms. But in the past month or so, there was news that you can now actually, I can't remember if it was just that you could get credits for those classes, taking the free classes online from MIT, or I think it might have been that you can actually get a degree from MIT doing their free courses. I can't remember which one it was, but it was like it was a big thing because it was that you could get credits for taking free classes. You know, it's like with everything being online, it's very hard to compete when there are a lot of free things offered.
Yeah, I haven't really been following the MOOC phenomenon as closely as I did a few years back, but I do know that that there are several free online degrees that you can earn, and I do also know that companies are trying to almost monetize, like you can take courses for free. But in order for you to get an actual degree or certificate, you would need to pay something. And companies are trying to monetize certifications and whatnot that are actually quite valuable to employers. So that, I think, is part of their business model.
The one I know of that does that, that I've taken some courses, is Coursera.
Yes, Coursera. So,
and they have good content, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Great. So my last question is, what's the number one advice, that gold nugget that somebody can take away from this interview? If they didn't pay attention for the past hour to have been talking, it's like, what's one thing they should take away?
You know, I'm sound like a broken record here, but brand promise. There's nothing more important. I think that as you grow in scale, it's exceedingly important that you think through how you can maintain your brand promise, something that is provides a stellar service for your customer, that differentiates you from your competition, that is replicable, that is predictable, that will get customers to become your evangelists, that will get them to check in on Facebook, to write reviews on Yelp, to, you know, write reviews on Google Plus, and, you know, the variety of other review sites that are out there, and just getting on the horn and telling their friends. That to me is the key to a service business, particularly ones that have human-to-human interaction.
Absolutely. That's a gold key. That's for sure. So if anybody wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way to reach you?
Well, you can reach me on Twitter. I'm easily reachable there at CodaKid is my Twitter handle. You can also reach me at my email address, which is david@tutorware.com. So those would be two very easy ways to reach me.
Okay, that's great. I'll make sure to include contact information in the show notes for anybody who wants to get in touch with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always happy to help entrepreneurs. I have received a ton of help along the way. I didn't mention this in our talk, but I can't stress how important it is to find mentors. I have several mentors in my life that are so helpful to me. I can't even describe. One of them is a venture capitalist who is now retired, but his name's Jamie Shannon, and he basically started the venture capital firm that backed Starbucks and Jamba Juice and Smith Ski Goggles and a number of other really, really well-known brands. He's been enormously helpful. Barry Libman is a local entrepreneur who sold his company for $100 million, and just a, you know, fantastic operations guy. Learned a ton from him. And then in organizations like EO, I've gotten just a ton of help. Always happy to help. Always happy. I view it as a way to, you know, pay it forward, and always happy to help people.
Thank you. That's a great tip for the road. Absolutely. Okay. Well, thank you so much for taking a little of your time today. I know you're busy. I have a lot on your plate running three businesses. So thank you so much.
Oh, always happy to help. And your business has been very, very helpful to mine as well. So what you've done for us on in SEO and inbound marketing has been tremendously helpful. So those of you that are listening to this, give Victor a call. You will not be disappointed.
Thank you. No, that's what I do. You know, that's what I love and I'm good at. And I love working with clients like you, helping you grow your business. That's what I always tell my clients. Like the way I like to work with our clients is that it's like your business is my business. You know, it's like I wouldn't recommend or do anything for you that I wouldn't do for my own business. You know, because I want to make sure that it's like I'm not just somebody that you hire to help you, but I'm like a business partner to help you make sure that you get your business objectives met, that you get everything done that you need to do to be able to keep growing your business.
That's it for today. I hope you paid attention. And if you didn't, make sure to listen again. David shared a lot of practical advice on running a thriving business, three businesses in his case. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes or by email to get our upcoming episodes. New episodes become available on the first and third Tuesday of every month. Next episode will be available on February 16th, right after Valentine's Day. Thanks for taking the time to tune in today. I know there are many shows to choose from. We appreciate and value your time. Until next time.